This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, and today our special guest is Greg McBride, a broker with Allendale. We'll break down USDA's latest report in just a moment. First off, how to make sure the nitrogen is available for use in the ground. Dr. Galen Morgan is with Cotton Incorporated.
You know, even if that there's soil nitrates there, typically that crop does need a little bit of nitrogen fertilizer kind of to get kicked off to make sure it gets off to a strong start, along with, you know, phosphorus as well and any other nutrients that may be limiting. But just making sure that at least there are some nutrients there in the beginning so that those small seedlings, you know, can develop a good root system and go down into the soil and pull up and find and pull up that nitrogen that's, you know, down there from years past.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, and we're joined today by Greg McBride. Greg is a commodity broker with Allendale and joins us from time to time. Greg, first, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Tony. Appreciate it.
All right. World Ag Supply Demand Estimates Report rolling out from USDA on Friday. And really, that follows a week earlier, a little over a week earlier, that USDA came out with acreage and intentions, if you will, planning, prospective plannings numbers. And suddenly, within 10 days, we get a lot of reports from USDA, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. It keeps you on your toes. It gives you a lot of things to think about as we start to look at the new crop situation here in the U.S.
Well, let's start with the World Ag Supply Demand Estimates Report and the WASDE report for April, again, released by USDA. And, you know, I know we'll want to get over to the corn, soybeans, and cotton numbers in just a moment, but with so much attention put right now on Eastern Europe and that area that we're looking at, Ukraine and Russia, that Black Sea region, wheat, a lot of eyes watching the wheat numbers, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, with what the USDA showed us on this report, you know, we did see an increase in U.S. Ending stocks for everything here, but that's not really a big story at this point. We know we're going to have some issues when it comes to the new crop side of things as far as dryness. But when you look at the world numbers, dropping the export demand for Ukraine by 1 million metric tons and then offsetting that with an increase from Russia, it's a little bit puzzling. You would think with how big of a player Ukraine is in that space that you would have seen a little bit bigger of a drop. But they, you know, the USDA always leaves things open for further changes down the road.
Some good points in here, and as I look at what USDA is throwing out as the projected season average farm price, up a dime, $7.60 a bushel, and they also note this would be the highest since 2012-2013. If I recall correctly, when we were talking about what was going on 10 years ago, we had really tight stocks numbers at that time, just not many days of use on hand.
Yeah, and I think we're going to get back to that type of a conversation. There's a lot of people throwing the world food crisis moniker out there, just like we had in 2007, 2008. You know, with the inflation that we've got across the world, there's going to be, you know, potential for higher prices, and you know, you throw in the potential for maybe some dryness across Kansas, Oklahoma, and Texas, and you do have a potentially much higher price wheat coming along. Not to mention what's going on in the northern plains at this point.
So let's now segue over to I guess another crop. We've got to talk corn. If we're even focused on that Eastern Europe area, if I recall correctly, like number four or number five exporter of corn is Ukraine. So is that working its way into the conversation as well?
Oh, absolutely. This was a kind of a shocker from the USDA, increasing the world-ending stocks from 301 million tons to 305.5, with most of that coming by way of a decrease from the from Ukraine, and you know, 4 million tons lower on their exports is a big deal. Now, that's going to be a little bit you know, a little bit misleading, because it's not like that demand necessarily goes away. Spain, Portugal, China, they're all still going to need that corn. They're just going to have to source it from somewhere else. So we should see the USDA start to adjust that on future numbers. Maybe it comes from Argentina. Maybe it comes from the U.S. Maybe it comes from Brazil. We know that, you know, obviously Argentina is roughly 20% harvested right now. You've got Brazil that's in the middle of their first crop harvest. Safrina is pollinating right now. So there is potential that the U.S. could pick up a little bit extra, maybe that Argentina and Brazil don't fill in the blank for.
Okay, let's throw soybeans in there as well. Looking at USDA's number, lower ending stocks, and doesn't look like they make any changes at all on season average soybean price, still 13 and a quarter. What are you watching?
Well, I think the biggest thing you have to watch is the demand situation here in the U.S. It has been very good. Old crop demand has been good. New crop demand, very good. We know that Brazil is down from where they thought they were about 4 months ago. Now, I say that, and the biggest thing to remember is, you know, at 125, or like Conab said yesterday, 122 point something for soybeans, that's not a failure of a crop for them. That's still an awfully big crop. It is, you know, disappointing that they didn't come in and get that record that they were hoping for. But, you know, we do have a little bit tighter ending stocks on beans as we go in, and we think about what the USDA told us last week. I mean, the acreage conversation, I don't think, is necessarily over, but having 4 million extra acres of beans this year definitely doesn't give you a reason to think that we're going to see things tighten up as we start to talk about new crop. Now, the old crop is a different story. That's fairly tight. We've got good prices. We're definitely overvalued, but it doesn't matter. If the funds want to be buyers, they're going to find a way to buy it, just like what we saw today.
Okay, let's throw in, I guess it would be, what, our number four or number five crop, depending upon whether or not we throw hay in there, but U.S. cotton. We've already got numbers from the National Cotton Council. We've got numbers now from USDA for projections for next year, but we're talking about prices we haven't seen, second highest prices in history for cotton. And the fundamentals seem to be there. What's USDA watching there?
Well, so the USDA, they kind of punted on this report for the U.S. side of things. They left the old crop ending stocks at 3.5 million bales, which is fine. The demand for U.S. cotton is still very good. Now, we are coming off this past week with a seasonal low for marketing year low for export sales, but overall it's been very good. The one thing I would note in one of the things you saw in the market today was you had the world ending stocks number come in higher than last month. So they raised us from 82.6 million bales up to 83.4, and so you saw the old crop cotton take a little bit of a hit today. The July was down just slightly. You had the May down a little bit more. But you saw that spreading into the new crop, and you saw the December contract finish over a penny higher. So they are definitely really starting to focus in on, say, that West Texas area where it is extremely dry. That drought monitor, it doesn't lie. It is dry out there, and they are dry for the next 7 to 10 days.
So, Greg, I'm glad you brought in the export side of that. And the sell side, we're actually hearing that mills may be buying much more than they really need because – they're not receiving what they need on a day-to-day basis. What happens if at the end of the marketing year we don't see that number as far as actual exports hit what USDA thinks we will? Again, discounting what we see on the sell side, just focused on the export side, would that be a concern?
It would be, yeah. I don't know if that's necessarily going to come into play. We've got some time to sort that out. But you know, the mills will play some games later on in the year where we see some movement there. But I think the biggest thing that from what we've seen so far is that demand is there. It's a matter of filling those orders. And we say the same thing on corn and soybeans all the time. You know, we can lock it in all the time. At some point, does it get shipped on this year's marketing? Maybe, but if it doesn't and it is a legitimate sale, we'll roll it out to the new year.
Okay. This one I'm just going to throw out there because though we have crops in the ground in South Texas, the rest of the U.S. really is not quite to that time of sticking it in the ground yet. So as we start that process, what are you watching as far as the 22 crops?
Rain, and more rain. we have enough rain, and we, you know, here this morning in northern Illinois, we had the snow coming in, and the eastern Corn Belt is wet. Eastern Iowa and Minnesota and parts of Missouri are extremely wet right now, and that's good. That's what we want to see. Now, it will give a lot of people a reason to start talking about planting delays. That probably is going to be the case, but with the technology the way it is nowadays, the machinery that we have, we can plant awful fast. We need, you know, 4 to 7 days in a lot of places of just that much of a window, and we can plant an awful lot of crops. So the biggest thing that, you know, as we move into to mid-April will be conversations about delayed planting. But, you know, as we get further into the north and in Illinois, Iowa, Indiana, and Nebraska, you know, April 10th to 15th is about the earliest you can start anyway. So it's not going to be that delayed in some areas, but it will be a problem for some guys, maybe in the eastern Corn Belt, especially, just like 2019, but hopefully with less prevent plant issues.
Just 30 seconds or so. We could spend 30 minutes on this, but kind of the elevator speech for who Allendale is and what you do and how we find you.
Yeah, Allendale has been around for over 35 years now. We are located, our headquarters in McHenry, Illinois. We have branch offices all over the U.S., anywhere from way out in Colorado to down in the southern tip of Florida. And basically just we specialize in the ag markets. We do kind of dabble in a lot of other things, but the ag markets are where we've made our name, and we continue to do research products where we're doing surveys to find out what acres look like, what yields look like for producers all over the country. And it really gives us an opportunity to get out there and just talk to producers and find out what's going on and what's important to them as we move through each marketing year.
You can find out more about Allendale online, allendale-inc.com, allendale-inc.com. Greg McBride's a broker with Allendale on today's Agribusiness Report.
As a farmer, there's a lot you can't control. Now there's one thing you can. Introducing the all-new Fendt Rogator 900 Series, the only rear boom sprayer with 2 height adjustable clearance to elevate your control in all seasons. Add Liquid Logic technology and 3-year Gold Star customer care, and you have a machine putting power at your fingertips. Learn more at LivingstonMachinery.com and to find a location near you. Livingston Machinery, 24/7 service for your 24/7 operation.
Texas Corn Producers serves the state's corn farmers through both the Corn Board and the Association. The board is putting your checkoff dollars to work in research, promotion, and education to ensure producer profitability and market expansion. The member-supported association is the farmer's advocate in Austin and Washington, D.C. on issues from the Farm Bill, water and property rights, and more. Join the Texas Corn Producers Association today and get the latest news and information about Texas Corn Producers' efforts online at www.texascorn.org.
Welcome back. It's the Agribusiness Report. Special guest Greg McBride with Allendale.
Why sorghum?
I think sorghum is a smart choice for growers because it just fits well with our limited moisture. There's a lot of improvement the last few years. It's just been a really good crop for us. It just works.
Sorghum has the ability over many crops to sit and wait on moisture, so it's a smart choice there.
Sorghum is a smart choice because it is flexible and tough. It's a good crop.
Rain or shine, sorghum is the smart choice.
Cotton growers, take out yield-robbing nematodes with an in-furrow application of Averland FC from Vive Crop Protection. A cost-effective solution, Averland FC fights early-season nematodes for healthier seedlings and stronger plant stands. Averland FC is the only abamectin product registered in-furrow for nematodes in cotton, and it's compatible with other crop inputs. To learn more, talk to your retailer or visit vivecrop.com. Averland FC is a restricted-use product. Read and follow label instructions.
Welcome back. It's the Agribusiness Report.
When it comes to farming in dry conditions, the formula for success is simple. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why growers looking to improve yield potential while protecting their bottom line rely on dry, tough, dryland cotton varieties from Delta Pine. Bred, tested, and made tough to handle the toughest growing conditions. Stay strong this season. Plant dry, tough, dryland cotton varieties from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Did you know that the world-famous Café du Monde has always used cottonseed oil to fry their beignets? Cotton Board invested over $1.5 million into cottonseed research and marketing last year with Cotton Incorporated, including research on the health benefits of cottonseed oil compared to other oils. Our goal is to make cottonseed oil the preferred cooking oil in kitchens across the country, like a Café du Monde in New Orleans. Forever Cotton. Visit cottonboard.org/forevercotton. Welcome back. It's the Agribusiness Report.
One is obviously weed management, you know, starting clean with that.
Dr. Galen Morgan with Cotton Incorporated.
And again, I know that these input costs are really scary, but I think one area that growers do not want to cut or should not cut corners on is on, you know, weed management. We're seeing more and more herbicide-resistant weeds, and if you ever get behind, especially like with pigweed, it's really hard, if not impossible, to kind of catch up on that. The other thing, one of the other big pushes we have here is we have numerous seed quality type research going on, so planting seed quality, looking at ways, again, to make sure the best seed possible is getting in the ground and getting off to a strong start, which then leads into, you know, better nutrient uptake and, you know, hopefully in the end, you know, higher yields as well.
This is the Agribusiness Report. Well, in reaction to the uncertainty in Eastern Europe, China booked their largest purchase of U.S. corn in 1 year, just shy of 1.1 million metric tons split between old and new crop deliveries. According to USDA, the Chinese were also the top destination in the past week for corn shipments, helping push exports during the marketing year to over 50% of USDA's forecast total. Now, at the same point last year, exports were at 56% of the USDA forecast, but private analysts believe China will rely more on the U.S. in the upcoming year as one of their largest suppliers, Ukraine, is tangled in a war with Russia. That's causing concern from buyers in that Black Sea region. For the first time in almost a year, tractor and combine sales fell below the pace of the previous year, with a steep decline in farm tractor sales, according to the latest data from the Association of Equipment Manufacturers. Domestic farm tractor sales fell more than 21% for the month of March compared to 2021, while combine sales for the month dropped more than 10% as well. Kurt Blades is Senior Vice President, Industry Sectors and Product Leadership with AEM, and says the news was expected. He said inventory levels are down more than 10% in both the U.S. and Canada as a result of supply chain difficulties catching up with the segment of the manufacturing industry. Now, not all classes of tractors experienced the decline, as the largest class of two-wheel drive tractors experienced a 7% year-over-year increase. Otherwise, the very popular hobby class of tractors, that's under 40 horsepower, fell almost 26% in a category that saw explosive growth during the coronavirus lockdowns, and the very large four-wheel drive tractors also slipped, but just a couple of percentage points from 2021. So overall, total farm tractor sales down nearly 8% for the year. Combine sales are more than 19% lower than the same time period 1 year ago. While U.S. beef exports have been red hot on the grill this year, pork exports are beginning to trend lower as demand from China and Hong Kong falls in light of their slow recovery from African swine fever. Now, according to the U.S. Meat Export Federation, larger shipments to Mexico and Japan have been bright spots, but logistic challenges and lower prices from competitors have pushed February exports down 7% or 17% from a year ago. Export values are down 14%. Now, in 2021, the U.S. pork industry delivered record-strong exports to Mexico, and that momentum continued through the second month of the year with volumes more than 33% higher than the first 2 months of 2021. Values also higher, up 19%. Dan Hallstrom is president and CEO of the U.S. Meat Export Federation, says despite a slow start to the year, pork exports to Japan rebounded in February, led by larger shipments of chilled cuts and variety meat. Exports to South Korea continue to post impressive value gains, fueled by larger shipments of chilled pork. It's the Agribusiness Report.
At Golden Harvest, our best skill is knowing how to listen. From our Gold Series soybean and game-changing corn portfolios to our expert insights housed in the Illuminate digital agronomy platform, everything we offer is an answer to what we've heard from you. This is how we listen.
Copyright 2021 Syngenta. The trademarks or service marks used herein are the property of a Syngenta Group company. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners.
United Ag is one of the largest association health plans to offer healthcare benefits for the agricultural industry. Their mission is to bring innovative healthcare solutions to agriculture by meeting their members' employee benefit needs. Join today and take advantage of the premier benefits offered by United Ag. United Ag is committed to contributing to a strong and healthy ag industry. For more information or to join, visit www.unitedag.org.